Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here. I came in this morning. Mike Cosentino was sitting in my chair. So I don't think my brain is going to work very well.
Yes,
you there, Mike?
Yeah. Mike Cosentino is right over here.
It does look like you're there.
It is in body, mind, and spirit, and maybe a little bit of soul.
And he was out partying last night.
I was out partying, and as any Facebook follower knows, that's an interesting social phenomenon that. But the whiskey was flowing, but that's a topic for another show.
Okay.
We should have a whiskey. I think a whiskey show would be a good idea.
Alcoholic binges on another show.
Well, you know, I support the local economy in a big way.
He's really a responsible.
I'm not sure about that. But let's move on.
Well, responsible, but he's moderate.
We
have Gary Lemaster in with us today.
Good morning, everyone.
We have Gary here to keep us on the straight and narrow.
And we thought what we'd do today is kind of a holding show, in a sense. We're going to review and update some big stories. And we want to start out with updating and reviewing the capital punishment show that we did in June.
Yeah.
I suggest you folks listen to that show because there's a tremendous amount of information about the history of capital punishment, attitudes toward capital punishment, and so forth and so on. Last week we had Michael Austin in. And do you have the? I don't want to misread the Constitution, Gary. Do you have the exact line on cruel and unusual punishment?
No, I don't. Actually.
Okay, I've got it somewhere. I can dig it up. But when we're talking to Michael Austin, he said, you know, part of the Constitution is really not open to interpretation. When the Constitution says each state shall have two senators, as Michael Austin said, it's hard to get three out of two.
Yeah,
you know?
Can't interpret that away.
It's not going to work.
I don't know. This current crew might interpret that a different way.
You can change the Constitution so there's three senators from each state. But when you have, it's the Eighth Amendment, right, forbidding cruel and unusual punishment, what constitute cruel and unusual punishment varies from time to time. As Michael Austin said, he quoted Scalia saying we can't go back to 200 years ago to what was cruel and unusual punishment then. Now, well, one of the guys...
It seems that we kind of have.
I think he was at the Constitutional Convention suggested cutting off the ears of of offenders. But the Constitution says no cruel and unusual punishment.
Yeah.
And we've had a series of disastrous, botched
I can read
execution.
It to you.
Okay, go ahead and read it, Mike.
Just not because
there's a preamble before
it's
the cruel
be
and unusual
disappointment.
Part.
Excessive bail shall not be required, nor excessive fines imposed, nor cruel and unusual punishment inflicted.
No cruel and unusual punishment.
And you had the number right.
Inflicted.
Eight is the correct number.
And it's the Eighth Amendment. We want to ask Gary to give us a sort of profile on these botched executions. And of course, I'm from Oklahoma. And of course, one of the worst botched executions in the country's history takes place in my old home state. The other thing that happens is the next big box execution is here in Arizona.
So you going to talk about that? You got that one in Oklahoma?
I know a little bit about it. I didn't make any notes on it. Basically, we should go back and start with why we are using the drugs that we're using now and why it suddenly is an issue is that basically the drugs that were used for lethal injection, which is the term for the you know current type of state sanctioned murder, is...
you can tell Gary is not a big fan of the death penalty.
I'm not really a pacifist. I just think that we've turned it into a spectacle. As I was mentioning before we went on the air, in the state Minnesota where I come from, where execution is, or the death penalty is not enforced. When you have a high-profile murder, and psychologists will tell you that one of the reasons for high-profile murders is that the murderer often wants the fame. When they go through the trial, sentence the murderer to life in prison, that's generally the last time you ever hear of them. And in places like Arizona, where we have the death penalty, Joseph Wood, who was recently executed, suddenly gets multiple days
he's celebrity status now in death. And that's an excellent point. Life in prison, they just go into oblivion, as they should. And when the state executes them, and especially when we can talk about this too, when the state takes 5, 10, 15, 20, 25 years.
And then there's not all the court cases, right, Mike? I mean, if you're sentenced to life in prison, that's pretty much it. You go to jail, you can appeal it, but it's not really this long process, this long, complicated process. It simplifies things incredibly, right?
The average length of time that somebody spends on death row in this country is just shy of 15 years. And usually that's in solitary in a 7x10 cell for 23 hours a day.
And I don't care whose constitution you're talking about, that's cruel and unusual punishment, period. We talked about before the show once again that even the state's threat, living under the threat of death. I mean, Sister Helen Prejean I mentioned her on the last show, is a great, eloquent advocate against the death penalty. And she talks about that every minute, every hour of every day, knowing that your state has selected you out of its millions to be killed. We want to focus on victims here, or at least acknowledge victims here, that these people, the jury found them guilty. They committed a crime, that a capital crime, and the state has, that where it's legal, what is it, 38 states, 36
states?
32 states. See, now that's like going down. Another phenomenon that people are noticing, that,
capital punishment's banned now in the European Union. I think we talked about last week, there's like five states that do the most executions.
It's the only reasonable.
China, the U.S., Iran.
Yeah.
Saudi Arabia, something like that.
Assuming reason has anything to do with this. On the last show, we talked about the difference between justice and revenge. And I said, just stop pretending that it's justice. It's revenge. And I've had other death penalty advocates agree. So you're right. Okay, I'll go along with that. It's revenge. So?
Certainly the in-laws of the fellow executed here in Arizona had no remorse at all that he took 2 hours to kill it.
Yeah, sure, took three.
And we talked about the other time, that's the reason we don't let relatives decide what happens to people. That's why we have a court system. That's why we have juries and judges and trials. We don't let the nearest neighbor or relative decide the sentence.
Where they do that is in Pakistan and some of the...
In Saudi Arabia.
Yes.
Forward-thinking places.
There's three really botched executions this year, all done with these drugs. The most dramatic and horrible. And as we were talking about the crime in Honduras, it's hard for us to communicate on the radio the immediacy of the danger. But this was a man named Clayton Lockhart. They had planned to have two executions on the same day.
In Oklahoma.
In Oklahoma. Clayton Lockhart, they refer to as bizarre death. He woke up. They were using a three-drug experimental contact. He writhed and grimaced on the gurney, struggled to lift his head, They stopped the execution because it was so horrible, except that he died of a heart attack 40 minutes later. Botched execution, they were, and to their credit, they didn't execute the next guy. One of the things that disturbs me is the cheapening of life. This, I think having a double execution on the same day sort of says to the person, you're not important. We're maybe killing you, but you're no big deal because we're killing somebody else after you. And I noticed in Texas, there was a ritual of the last meal. There was a ritual of executions at midnight. And, Texas has started executing two or three people at a time whenever it's convenient for them. And I think that's not a disrespect. They see it as a hatred of the criminal, but it's a disrespect for, it seems to me, life itself. But anyway, there's Lockhart. There was a case in Ohio, right, Gary?
Right, and there was one in Florida, and then I think there's been some questionable ones in Texas as well. The one in Arizona, I think if you really want to understand the I think depravity of what happened, you should read the article in the Arizona Republic by Michael Kiefer. I was reading it last night to take notes for the show today, and I'll spare you the intricate details of the execution. And I don't mean to, I don't think any of us excuse the criminals. I think, you know, there certainly is justifiable punishment, and I really think that we need to keep the victims in mind. But I don't think this type of execution does anybody any good. I don't think execution.
He lasted 2 hours, right, Gary? Gasping like a fish out of water.
I'll take you through the timeline just briefly.
Let me mention that the governor is going to review this. I mean, so that's.
And the prison system says nothing went wrong. They think the execution was just fine. At least in Oklahoma, they thought, we made a big mistake here.
If we rag on Arizona here, which occasionally we do, at least the government, love the state, not too sure about the government. They are, at least having it reviewed is a step toward doing the right thing.
But Mike, I'd like to see it reviewed by an independent group rather than by the correction officials. I'd like to see an independent review of what happened.
That's a good point.
And as we always say, you know, the first press reports are often wrong. Sometimes they're quite right. You want to get back and get a perspective on it. But in this case, Gary.
Well, at 1:30 in the afternoon, he was strapped to the gurney, and they began putting the IV lines in. And this is a much scrubbed up version of what the article said. At 1:54, the drugs began to flow into the IVs. Beginning the execution. So 1:54 is when it started. At 4 minutes into the procedure, the doctor came in and checked Wood's eyes and pulse and said that it's confirmed that he is sedated. At 2:05, Wood's mouth opened. 3 minutes later, it opened again. The chest moved as if he had burped. Kiefer said that he made a pencil stroke on a pad. By the way, Kiefer has witnessed 5 executions and as a media witness. So he's not exactly new to this, nor a weak stomach. But he said he made a pencil stroke on a pad of paper each time that Wood's mouth opened, and he ticked off more than 640. Which wasn't even all of them because at times his view was blocked by the doctor. He described the execution as Wood drowning in air. Finally, Wood started to gasp less frequently, once, twice, two minutes apart. He stopped at 3:36. At 3:40 and 3:48, the doctor examined him and pronounced him dead. So the execution drug out from the time he was placed on the gurney at 1:30, and the IV started at 1:54. He was finally pronounced dead at 3:48, nearly 2 hours later.
they used pretty much the same drugs that were used in Ohio in that botched execution and the one in Oklahoma. Why suddenly are we having so much trouble murdering people? I mean, what's going on?
Well, they,
well, or killing people. Let's be more objective, guys.
The lethal ejections started by the United States invented the procedure, and we started in 1977.
It was declared constitutional in 2008, lethal injection, in I think it was called the case of Bayes versus Reyes, and they offered several different opinions. It wasn't really clear. But the court has stopped capital punishment for people who are mentally handicapped, for juveniles, which would be in a violation of a whole lot of stuff if you start executing, for eliminated rape and felony murder as capital crime. So there's been some movement on the court in this direction.
So anyway, the executions began, and or the lethal injections began in 77. As Steve said, they were challenged. They originally used an anesthetic called thiopental in combination with other drugs. In 2010, a shortage of thiopental left states scrambling to find other drugs. In Arizona and other states were able to obtain supplies apparently improperly, according to Kiefer, until their source was cut off. Then they switched to the barbiturate pentobarbital. Pentobarbital manufacturers soon put in place sales controls to avoid its use for executions because most of the world doesn't share our desire to enforce the death penalty.
Against the law in Europe, right?
Right.
The whole European Union.
And some of the companies just didn't want to be known as the company that sells, execution drugs. They're selling drugs that heal people. They're not wild about getting a reputation for being known as a company that sells drugs that kill people. By the end of last year, 2013, pentobarbital also became unavailable for executions. And so they've been trying to find a suitable replacement ever since. And prior to Wood's execution, his attorneys took the issue all the way to the Supreme Court.
Arizona Supreme Court.
No, the U.S.
Is that right?
Yes. They wanted to know, at least that was my understanding.
They wanted to know the drugs.
They wanted to know the drugs. They felt that somebody being executed had a right to know what they were being executed with.
There are a bunch of state-based suits and stuff.
Yeah, so the suit was rejected and the execution was allowed to proceed.
So they used untested combinations of drugs to kill people, and because they'd never been tested, you can't exactly go test these things, because they were untested, and most doctors will not cooperate in killing people. It's against their oath. They've been really botched, and we've had I think four botched murders. This is the botched murder year of the century so far.
It's just unbelievable to me that in 2014 the state, whatever state it is, and doesn't have a lab. Okay, I'm listening to this conversation. I'm buying that companies don't want to be known as the place where you get drugs to, so states could administer the death penalty and have a citizen's kill, especially when they're wrong so often.
And there are lots of ways to kill someone.
That's it. I mean,
In China, they take you, once you're, they pronounce the death penalty, they take you out, outside and make you kneel and put a bullet in the back of your head, and then they send the spent cartridge to your family and along with the bill to pay for it.
The debate goes way back.
But it's quick.
Well, there's no constitution, no U.S. constitution in China anyway.
In 1878, the Supreme Court ruled in Wilkerson versus Utah that the death by firing squad was permissible. but it agreed that the old English practices, we think of ourselves as being so humane, of execution where prisoners were disemboweled alive, beheaded and quartered, publicly dissected and burned alive were unconstitutional. So these issues about cruel and unusual punishment start very early in the history of the country.
And before you dismiss us as being a bunch of bleeding heart liberals, I'd like to read part of the editorial from the Arizona Republic, you know, that liberal rag
down south. A Gannett newspaper.
When my conservative friends claim it's liberal, I said I always say to them, "Give me a list of the number of Democrats that they've endorsed for office."
Yes. You know. So anyway, I'll just quote a couple of sentences out of their editorial of last week. You know, this execution took place last Wednesday, so this hasn't. Been around for a long time. The editorial, they said, the increasingly irrational argument for attempting to humanely put a convict to death has run out the string in Arizona. It's not humane to leave a human being, however deserving of death, to gasp for air for 2 hours before dying, as double murder Joseph Rudolph Wood did on Wednesday. A firing squad armed with high-velocity rifles loaded with hollow-point ammunition would be more humane. And
John McCain called it torture.
Yes.
John McCain called it torture.
And then at the end of the editorial, they said, by trying to pretend, and this is something I totally agree with, by trying to pretend we are putting these convicts quietly to sleep, we have instead fallen into a protocol that assures a lingering horror. If that is not the definition phrase, cruel and unusual punishment, the words have lost all meaning.
Wow. Good for them.
And yeah, the first one of these to happen was in Ohio, and the reports are almost exactly the same as what happened in Arizona. So they simply don't care whether this stuff works or not, maybe. I don't know. According to the reports in Ohio, a man was executed named Dennis McGuire. Gasped loudly for air, made snorting and choking sounds for at least 10 minutes before going still and dying 24 minutes later. McGuire, of course, was a convicted killer and rapist, and Ohio officials say he felt no pain.
Well, that was the family.
And how do they know that?
I don't know.
the victim's family said that what the reporters saw and what they saw a guy that didn't wake up, that he may have opened his mouth, he may have moved, but he didn't wake up. So they saw a guy that went to sleep, never woke up, and died 2 hours later.
And the fellow in Oklahoma woke up. That was the
yes. Well, I'm talking about the victim's family here in Arizona. Yeah. What they said, they
also said he got what he deserved, and they didn't care whether he suffered or not, didn't they?
Pretty much. Matter of fact, they were hoping.
And I think that's a lot of a lot of the attitude. So what's the value here, guys?
Well, one of the things I'd like to point out that I think makes this whole issue puts it into another perspective is that modern DNA testing has shown that 4% of prisoners on death row were in fact innocent. And since we've been doing modern DNA, we've exonerated 312 prisoners who were, convicted and sentenced to the death penalty. So it's one thing to do this kind of an execution to someone who really probably deserves it. It's another thing to do it to someone that is innocent. And I think you can't remove that from the equation.
So I think for all of us, the fact that you can make a mistake with these capital punishment sentences, and we've shown, and they have DNA evidence, thank the stars, we have DNA evidence, shows that there are people who are innocent, some of whom were executed. I think the strongest argument against it, or one that should appeal to the broadest number of people. None of us are pacifists, right? But we all are opposed to capital punishment for various different reasons. But I asked Mike, and you know, is people like capital punishment? I know guys who would like to be on a firing squad killing somebody if they thought that the guy deserved it. They would like to be there. They like carrying guns. They spend their whole lives waiting for somebody to step out of line so they can shoot and kill somebody. And it makes them feel like, I don't know what, but big men, like powerful.
I don't know. These are the same people that talk about, you know, acting like God. And so they, you know, if the person, the justification is the person has been found guilty by the legal system. And the state then carries out the sentence, and carrying out that sentence with these inadequate drugs seems to be the problem. Now, with this, so we got lots of issues going on here. We got the issue of, we keep backing up into the philosophical argument, capital punishment as a remedy for the botched executions. Well, that's not exactly what we're supposed to be talking about.
The botched executions are an argument against capital punishment, but certainly not the only argument against them. Even if they had all these executions you would not be in favor of it, right?
Exactly. As you just pointed out, that killing innocent, the state killing innocent people, even one in a place like the United States, should be a huge call to end capital punishment. We've killed dozens, if not hundreds, in our history of innocent men and women.
I'd say more like thousands.
I think it would be a stretch.
Depends on how you define it, because we've killed a lot of innocent people through a genocide of Native Americans.
World is filled with murder and violence.
Sanctioned.
You can look at the Middle East.
Yeah, you know, electric chair, gas chamber, lethal injection. The last three decades we've been using this lethal injection. It's been around a long time. And it was going well until, and so we could ignore it, you know, the states were quietly killing their people, and until the one effective drug stopped becoming available. And that's why we are now having this discussion. That's why we're having this box execution, because this one drug is not as available.
So if the execution weren't botched, if they weren't sort of cruel and unusual punishment,
yeah, we wouldn't be having the show for sure.
Yeah, it would be legal under American law, right?
And I think you're dealing with two groups here. You have a group of people who support the death penalty. You have a group of people that like to view themselves as tough guys, and they want to deal out vengeance. And I really think that's a big part of it. And then you have another group of people that are more silent about it, but they view it as they want it to be just putting somebody to sleep, and it's not really killing. It's putting them to sleep, and they get what they deserve. I don't think either of those groups is exactly right. I think if we're going to kill people, we ought to acknowledge that we are killing somebody. And I think that it's more humane to the firing squad or something similar is more humane than this sort of thing. That's just my personal point of view. And I don't think it should be all wrapped up in emotions of vengeance. I think it should be, it's actually cheaper. It's 10 times less costly to put somebody in prison for life than it is to execute them.
Oh, yeah.
Let me ask you guys a sort of philosophical question, and it's a question that I think goes down from the ages. What's the connection, Gary and Mike, between revenge and vengeance and justice and protecting society from further crime?
Well, I'm in the old eye for an eye thing. I mean, as you sin, so you shall be punished, and I think that's part of the basis is that they want to in advocacy for the victim.
And that's in the Old Testament. In the New Testament, there's no justification.
I mean, it's hard to imagine Jesus and Buddha being in favor of capital punishment. I just can't imagine it. Muhammad is in all kinds of battles with all kinds of enemies, so I think he would be part of that religion.
And in the New Testament, it's vengeance is mine, you know.
Yeah, you're never supposed to take vengeance; you're supposed to turn the other cheek. Yeah. But does anybody really want to do that? And in Buddhism, you're not supposed to take any life unnecessarily. You
in Buddhism, you have compassion for, you know, you even show compassion for your enemies.
But what is this desire for revenge? Is it a deep natural rage that people have, that some people kind of, what would you call, cultivate this rage and keep it going? Or is it,
I don't know, Steve. You're automatically, your conversation turned toward religion when you asked that question.
I'm not necessarily trying to get at people's religion.
There's no answer to be found there, so you're moving. We moved on.
So you think that capital punishment is based on revenge and vengeance and those emotions rather than trying to protect society?
I can't tell you where that comes from.
I think there's also something to look at is, you know, I'm a martial artist and I literally know hundreds of ways to kill somebody with my hands.
That's why we don't disagree with you very much, Gary.
But I mean, the body is a very fragile, you know, thing. But, and I would personally have no problem, you know, doing that, and if it was necessary in the heat of the moment. You know, it's if I needed to kill somebody to save my wife or save someone else, some other innocent, I wouldn't think twice about it. I would regret it afterwards. But I think that's a different thing than premeditated, long drawn out, you know, planned execution. That I'm not in favor of. And I think it's so I'm definitely not a pacifist, but I think that's, you know, we have different classifications of murder. You know, we have premeditated murder, which we punish far more severely than we do, you know, a crime of passion. And I think you have to look at all of that, you know, when you start assessing any form of execution, and then especially, you know, something that is cruel.
We're a kind of an odd group because we're all in agreement here that death penalty for variety, for all the reasons we've mentioned so far, is should be done away with, rethought. I want to quote the Wall Street Journal, but I want to get back to this Arizona botched execution for a moment,
sure,
which is part of the... Ken Scheidegger in the Wall Street Journal said, this was not a cruel execution. The execution carried out the judgment handed down by the court. It may have been difficult to watch, he said, but it was not painful. It was not painful.
How do you justify those two things?
let me get the quote correctly. It may have been painful for spectators to watch, but it wasn't painful for Mr. Wood. Because as some people have said, he went to sleep, he was sedated the entire time, he never woke up, regardless of his thrashing and actions. Now, the other side of that, the death penalty based, it's called the, I'm going to get the name correctly here. The group that is against the death penalty, Richard Dieter, the executive director of the Death Penalty Information Center, once again in the Wall Street Journal, that it's more evidence that the death penalty has become an embarrassing spectacle.
And I think Gary started out with that point that it turns the criminal into a spectacle, makes him not the hero in the sense of the good guy, but makes him the central figure of the story rather than the people who were gotten murdered. I've never been on a murder trial, but I've been on attempted murder trials as a juror. And the thing that struck me in one of the cases that I was on was that, you know, one drug dealer tried to shoot another drug dealer. And as it was attempted murder because he missed. But I just think there's so many it's fortune. If he had hit the guy, you know, and he came pretty close, apparently shot several times at him, then he would be guilty of murder. And it's the fact that his aim was bad that he got off. I think he, well, he didn't get off, and then we put him away for 7 years. But on the other hand, you know, I think a lot of it, you know, you get into a bar fight, you hit somebody, they fall, they hit their head and die, then you're guilty of manslaughter. The same fight, they fall and they don't hit their head and you're not. And I think that I think we don't want to admit the thrown variable nature of reality, the fact that, you know, this guy was intending to kill somebody, he just didn't succeed.
You can throw in the stand your ground, you know, cases too, that I think raise all sorts of questions around this whole subject. And the fact that we still refuse to have universal background checks on guns that result in many, many more deaths than we're talking about here. We've only picked out a couple of sensationalized deaths. You know?
Stand the ground is a good topic that we should get to sometime. But I'm struck by the fact that a lot of it is an accident, whether you're a murderer or you're not a murderer. And so, to me, that means you don't want to be too extreme in punishment unless, you know, I mean, certainly if someone has methodically killed someone. So when we were on the trial, one of the people, and I thought it was very silly, said, he shot at the other guy, but how do we know he was trying to kill him rather than just wound him? Oh. And I went, you shoot at somebody, you're trying to kill him. You know, so he's guilty. But, it's reality is this shifting ground. And I don't think everything works out like it does in storybooks. I think there's a lot of thrownness. Gary gets into a fight with, some guy and kills him. But there's a witness who's a friend of his who testifies Gary killed him unnecessary. Gary goes off to prison.
Intent is huge. I mean, they have shows on television. The intent, called criminal intent. In other words, in the law, the intent is important. So your friend on the jury was accurate in trying to determine, I think anyway, the intent of the shooter.
The older I get, the more I realize that things are never black and white. There's many, many, many shades of gray.
Yeah.
And I think that murder is, or killings are no exception.
Well, we're only singling out murder here because I don't think any of us are prepared to talk about the other capital crimes, the other reasons.
Let me give you an example of vengeance. We went into a florist shop on right off of Columbus Avenue when I lived in New York. Some pots were knocked over. We didn't see anybody there. New York, nobody ever leaves their store. We wandered around, looked around, and left. And as we left, a woman came running out. Actually, a guy came running out, and a woman came running out, and her hands were tied. And she said he was going to rape me, right? Mm-hmm. He was going to rape me. And we chased the guy to the middle of Columbus Avenue, and two guys coming from the west side of the street, and two of us from the east side of the street. The guy had what looked like a gun in his hand, small automatic. I dodged in and out between things. I was young. I figured, you know, I had some training in firearms, and I didn't think he could probably shoot me, you know, but it was a scary, scary situation. We knocked him down in the middle of the street. We had one guy on each arm and leg. We have him down in the middle of the street. We've stopped traffic in one of the Manhattan's busiest streets. We're holding him down, and this guy comes up and socks him in the jaw, breaks his jaw, it turns out. And, you know, two of us say, hey, you know, you weren't, where were you when we were taking this guy down with a gun, you know? And, it turned out to be a toy. It skidded very weirdly, but it, you know, was enough to convince this woman to let him, push her into a closet. And he was taken off his belt when she and heard us, and when she bolted, hit him in the jaw. And two of the guys, one of the guys said, "Yeah, go ahead." And the other guy hit him again, and right in the jaw, smashing his face is on the ground. And we said, "Hey, wait a minute. You can't do this. You can't continue to beat the guy that we have stopped from committing any crimes or from getting away." Right. And so there was that fury. And he said to us, he said, "That was my girlfriend he was going to rape in there." And that's why the guy said, "Okay, go ahead." But there's vengeance and rage. And then there's doing what's necessary to stop a criminal. It seems to me that they're often very different things. And we were all scared. I mean, the guy did seem to have a gun. He was waved it around at me. But we didn't beat him after we had him down and neutralized. But there were people who wanted to keep pounding him, take him, throw him off a bridge or something.
Because of his intent.
Because of, yes. So I don't know. I think that rage and revenge, some people keep it in their hearts for a very, very long time. And so it's not this instant situation that we were in. But I think a lot of the need to have capital punishment comes from that. This is my personal
That's view. A really murky area. I mean, you know, you're talking psychology here, and nobody here is qualified, and even the ones that are qualified aren't qualified.
I'd like to lighten this whole thing up a little bit, if I could. I'd like to talk about another form of punishment that's going to be foisted upon us pretty soon. As I read yesterday that Sarah Palin is creating this Sarah Palin channel. that she's going to be turned loose and in a media of her own to make pronouncements.
Part of this is the whole Glenn Beck, Rush Limbaugh, Sarah Palin syndrome. The more we talk about them, the more we hate on them, the more some people embrace them.
I think that's
I'm
true.
I'm not hating on them. I just laugh at them.
Well, for want of a better person.
But the left, sure. I mean, you know, if you gun rights, for example, with my conservative friends, they have a whole litany of where somebody, a burglar breaks into the house and the gun rights guy shoots him dead. And that's fine. And then on the liberal blogs, you get a whole series of one kid shooting another. You get all the failed things, all the accidents, somebody shooting his son coming into the house late at night. You get all these, phony stand your ground things. So, on one side you get all the positive antidotes, and on the other side you get all the negative antidotes. So, I don't know. I think you may be right that liberals focus too much on like the Sarah Palin's latest outrageous comment to impeach the president. Although apparently
she's not alone. Unfortunately,
yeah, that's the problem.
Well, but she is. I mean, who does she have? Fox News. Who does she have? She has.
They did a poll of Republicans, and the majority of Republicans want impeachment. There's no reason for impeachment, but they want it anyway. They just don't like him, you know. So
impeach him for being black, or because he was born in Kenya. I mean, they don't say why.
They've been trying to manufacture a reason for some time, and they had to come up with such a silly thing to sue him for that he didn't implement. The rules.
Corporate mandate.
Exactly when it originally had been planned. But of course, that's what you have an executive for, is to make decisions like implementing the law. Don't know. I don't know. I mean, we live in interesting times.
All right, so immigration. Are we going to talk about that next time?
I think next time, don't we have one of your demented relatives coming in?
Oh, whoa, 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 whoa.
Not demented.
Not exactly an introduction. We are going to demonstrate here on Democratic Perspective what we talk about a lot, that we have families, and that within those families there are differences of opinion. So we felt that it would be educational and it's a little bit of fun.
This may be more revealing about Mike than
he's a relative of Mike, so we can't really say no.
I always say I don't have any Republican friends, but you can't pick your family, and so we do have a visitor to Sedona from we're gonna expand our Western New York audience by having Charles Vicanti on next week. Famous right-wing spokesman from Snyder, New York, here, and we're going to argue some of the best topics of the day. Family style. Pasta will be served, and I'll make the gravy, and we'll go from there. See you next week.
Tune in next week. Should be interesting, folks. VVID.org is our website. And listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks.